And let me tell you a little bit about our main guest tonight. Dr. Jerry Tennant was accepted in the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School back in 1960 at the age of 19 and graduated in the top 10 of his class in 1964 with an MD degree. Taught surgeons all around the world to do outpatient eye surgery and was instrumental in getting Congress to pay for outpatient surgery, saving Medicare millions of dollars every year. He was one of the first surgeons in the U.S. to place intraocular lenses in the eyes after cataract surgery, simply eliminating the need for these very thick, incapacitating glasses after cataract surgery. He has also been awarded the degree of Doctor of Natural Medicine by the World Organization of Natural Medical Practitioners. We talk tonight about voltage in your body on Coast to Coast. Jerry, how are you, Doc? Good to hear you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I don't know if you know every ophthalmologist around the country, but I had a friend of mine who has retired and he's moved down to Florida, Dr. Marvin Koenig from St. Louis.
Oh, yes.
Did you know Marvin?
Of course. Great guy.
Yeah. Opened up in outpatient surgery center probably after you started developing these back in the early 1980s, but just a superb doctor.
Absolutely. Great guy and great surgeon.
Tell me a little bit about you and beyond this background.
Well, as you mentioned, I'm trained as an ophthalmologist and practiced eye surgery for about 30 years or so and had a great deal of fun doing that. We were able to accomplish a few things. I was one of the first in this country to put the lenses in eyes after cataract surgery, and we did the majority of the research for the laser that's used in LASIK surgery. And I developed, along with a couple of my friends, the ability to do eye surgery as an outpatient instead of the patients being hospitalized. And so I did a few of those things as an ophthalmologist and had a great deal of fun doing it. The problem that developed for me was that when I did the research for the laser used in LASIK surgery, is that we didn't know that viruses wouldn't be killed by the laser.
Mm.
So as I was treating the eyes, bent over, of course, using the microscope, and as the laser would remove tissue from the eye, it caused viruses to come up, and they went through my mask, into my nose, and into my brain. And so I developed encephalitis and had a bleeding disorder as well.
Oh, my God.
So the problem that happened was I got to where I could figure out what was wrong with the patient, but I couldn't remember how to write a prescription. Also developed spastic movements, which doesn't work really well if you're operating inside somebody's eyeball.
No, not at all.
And so for all of those reasons, I had to quit working at the end of November in 95. And so I ended up sleeping about 16 hours a day, and I'd have 2 or 3 hours a day in which I could think clearly enough to read a newspaper, and then just like a light switch, it'd go off again, and I couldn't figure out what I was reading.
Unbelievable, Jerry.
So I traveled around, saw the best docs I could find all over the country, and they all just said the same thing. You have 3 viruses in your brain. We don't know what to do about it, so good luck. So it was obvious that during those 2 or 3 hours of lucidity, I had to try to figure out how to get myself well. And I had this idea that if I could figure out how to make one cell work, I could make them all work. And I hadn't read any cellular biology books for over 30 years, so I bought several of them and started reading through. And one of the things that resonated with me for some reason was when one of those books would mention that cells had to run in a very narrow range of pH. I thought that that was probably important. And the books really didn't talk much about it. They'd have a paragraph or occasionally a page, but not much about it. So I began to go try to remember what pH was all about. And, you know, I remember it had something to do with acid-base balance, but I really couldn't tell you much about what it was. And
how to do it, right?
And how to do it. So as I began to study about pH, what I found, of course, it means potential hydrogen, but what it really is a measure of voltage. So the way you measure pH is you take a sophisticated voltmeter and you measure the voltage of a solution, and then you convert it to a logarithmic scale called pH. And so by convention, they've set it up so that if you measure a solution and it happens to be electron donor, then you put a minus sign in front of the voltage. And if the solution has to be an electron stealer, you put a plus sign. Well, how it works then is that if you measure a solution and it measures a plus 400 millivolts, then that's called a pH of zero. And if it measures a minus 400 millivolts of electron donor, that's called a pH of 14.
And the body is supposed to be about 7, right?
7.35 to 7.45.
Okay.
Is where the body's supposed to run. And of course, that corresponds, 7.35 is the same thing as minus 20 millivolts. And 7.45 is the same thing as minus 25 millivolts. So our cells, every cell in our body is designed to run between 20 and 25 millivolts of electron donor status. Well, once I read that, then it, of course, began to make sense. Cells have to have voltage to work. Aha. So as I began going down that road, then I began to realize that although cells sometimes have what's called an action potential that's a much higher voltage, but the basic environment for cells is 20 to 25 millivolts, and to make a new cell, you have to have minus 50 millivolts.
And put that in perspective, what in terms of those kinds of millivolts, what does that mean in terms of, like, compare it to using something, an appliance or a battery or anything?
Well, a battery is 1.5 volts, and a millivolt is 1/1000 of a volt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's obviously not compared to a battery. It's, you know, less than 1/1000th of what a battery would be.
So not a lot of voltage needed.
No, it doesn't take a lot, but it has to have enough, or like any other electrical appliance, it doesn't work. And that's one of the first magical keys to understanding that I began to figure out, was that if you don't have enough voltage, it doesn't work.
And were you doing this, doctor, on your own, or were you getting help from other doctors who understood this?
No, I was sitting here on my couch, periodically confused, trying to figure this out. So the next thing I ran across that was quite interesting is how rapidly we change our cells. So, for example, we get new rods and cones in our retina every 48 hours. The skin that you're sitting in this very moment is only 6 weeks old. Your liver's 8 weeks old, your nervous system's 8 months old, and your bones are a year old. So we're constantly replacing ourselves. And so that puts a new perspective on things because you have the option when you make new cells to either recycle your old cell waste products and make a new cell from that, or if you've had good nutrition, of course, you can make cells with good materials.
From the get-go.
And that puts a real fine focus on the need for good nutrition. Because if I'm going to build a house and I build it out of materials from a house that was torn down because of termites, my new house isn't going to work very well. And so it is with cells. We really want to make them with good new raw materials.
And I guess that includes the heart too then, right?
Sure, absolutely.
How long does it take to regenerate cells and displace cells, for example, for the heart muscle?
You know, I haven't been able to find that information in the literature, but it's going to be somewhere between the 2 months for a liver and the 8 months for the nervous system. So it's going to be in that range of probably about 4 months or so.
I went about a month or so ago. I do my my annual blood chemistry and all that. And I took an A1C test. It's a blood glucose type test.
Right.
And the doctor was explaining to me, he said, this will register how you've done glucose-wise over 3 months. And I said, how do you know that? And because I could go back 3 months from now, for example, and I could be better than I was. And he said, we have determined that your cells will die off in 3 months, those cells that are accumulating too much of this, and new ones will come. And if you're doing the right thing, you're going to have a better reading. So they talked in that terms about 3 months for, I guess, the cells that are keeping your glucose and things like that.
Right. So the important thing I want people to understand is that you're constantly rebuilding yourself, and so you really have to have adequate nutrition to do a good job of that. And actually, when you hear the old saying, you are what you eat, is actually quite true. And so you have to be really careful and focused on your diet.
What role did Dr. Robert Becker play? His incredible book, The Body Electric, where he talked about the body's ability as well, that it was electric. Did this book have anything to do with your decision to go in this direction?
Sure. As I began, after I figured out that cells have to have voltage, then I began looking for people who had looked at that subject. And, of course, Becker is one of the giants in that area.
Yep.
Lakowski who was a Russian that lived in Paris, wrote a great deal. In fact, Lakowski was probably the first person in modern times to use electronics to heal the body. And he was a personal friend of Nikola Tesla.
Well, he knew the right guy.
Yeah. In fact, old Lakowski was having trouble getting his device to work, and so Tesla came to Paris and got it to working and allowed Lakowski to patent it. And so he created and patented the first really electrical device from modern times.
By the way, you sound just like Apollo 14 astronaut Edgar Mitchell, who comes on the show every once in a while. Almost identical voices.
I do. Interesting. I have a foghorn voice that my kids love because it doesn't carry very far, and they could always say, "Well, Dad, I didn't hear you."
Okay, so back to Becker, and you were reading his book, The Body Electric, looking for other doctors and practitioners who shared your views, I guess, right?
Yeah, I was just trying to, figure out how things really work so that I could get well. And as I began to recognize that the body was an electrical system, then, of course, it was great to run across Becker's work. And then, of course, there was Jorn Nordenstrom, from Sweden, who wrote the amazing book called Biologically Closed Electrical Circuits. Nordenstrom was the president of the Nobel Committee, and he's the fellow who invented these deep tissue biopsy needles for biopsying tumors and so forth. So when he would go in to biopsy a tumor, he would, before he did the biopsy, he actually would attach his needles to electronic devices so he could measure the voltage of the tissue and identify the characteristics of cancer tissue, and then was able to cure cancer by putting a needle into the tumor and one in the adjacent tissue and just run a current through them. And so he developed this amazing system of getting rid of malignancies.
And when you talk about healing as voltage in your book, are we talking about delivering the body electricity the conventional way, the way that, we all know about electricity, or are you talking about it with nutrition?
Well, nutrition can have and should have voltage in it. For example, if you go down to Radio Shack and buy a voltmeter that measures in millivolts, and you take a raw potato and stick the electrodes into that potato, you'll measure voltage. Then if you bake that potato or freeze that potato and put the voltmeter back in it, the voltage is all gone.
Interesting. Now, what about for a human, if you held both of the terminals of a voltmeter like that? Would it show any reading?
It does.
It does. All right.
The problem is that it pulses, the voltage in the body pulses, and so it's hard to get the endpoint. So your question is actually where the question that came up when I said, okay, my body needs voltage to work, so how do I measure it?
Yeah, you're not going to stick your finger in a socket, that's for sure.
There you go. So the first issue then is, how do I figure out what's going on? And I discovered that a Japanese guy named Nakatani had figured this out and published it in 1951. And he realized that you couldn't just use a standard voltmeter to get good endpoints, and so he developed a system of using actually an ohmmeter. And he was the first person to use modern electronics to measure acupuncture meridians. And then the following year, 1952, a German guy named Reinhold Bohl published his work, and it was very similar to Nakatani's, except that Bohl had identified some additional acupuncture points. And so people since the 50s have used various devices based on either Nakatani or Bohl's work around the world to begin to measure. So I bought Nakatani's equipment and began to measure my voltage and discovered that my brain was supposed to be running at 20 to 25 millivolts and was running between 2 and 4 millivolts. Wow. So I knew why it didn't work.
Now, did you use other people as a test subject to compare to you?
Eventually I did. In the beginning, it was just, me sitting here at home trying to figure out how to get well.
Okay.
And my wife got involved with that as well.
When you measure your brain voltage, like, how do you do that? Are you sticking terminals in your ears or what? What are you doing?
No, if you do it the way that Nakatani and Bohl did it, there are actually three different wires or acupuncture circuits that carry voltage up to the brain. And so you simply go on the hands and the feet, and there are specific points where you measure them.
And you just measure
that point, and then you can see what each individual wire is doing for that portion of the brain, and then you can average them out and see what the total brain is.
Were you shocked that your voltage reading was so low, or did you think maybe this thing's not working?
Well, from what I read about cells having to have this very narrow range of voltage to work, then, of course, it was no great surprise when I found that the voltage was quite low. But I was excited to figure out now why my brain didn't work, because now I knew I had the ability to get it working again. And so over time, I began to discover that fibrous tissue has the least impedance to the flow of electrons of any tissue in the body. What that means then is that wherever you have fibrous tissue in the body, it's serving two purposes. One is it's structural, but it's also an electrical circuit. And so the fibrous tissue that makes up the fascia of the body, which is that kind of shiny sheath around all the muscles, those are actually wires that are the same thing as the acupuncture meridians. And so what happens then is we have this main wire that goes up the back and down the front in the middle of the body. And then from that, we have other wires that go out around all of the muscles. And then from that down to every organ. And then there's a sheath around every organ. And then from that, there are little fibers that go down to every cluster of cells. So what that means is that we have this total wiring system, and that whatever we do to the midline of the body, we do to every cell in the body. So it gives us the opportunity then to tap into these various circuits with our electronics and measure and know what the voltage is in any deep circuit.
And I would assume, doctor, that when voltage is really low in certain parts of the body, that's probably where some of your illnesses could be. We'll be back in a moment. I want to ask you more about that. And also, we're going to talk with you about your pH level. And there are ways you can test that for yourself, too, by the way. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with Dr. Jerry Tennant. His book, Healing is Voltage, the Handbook. Jerry, let's talk about the voltage and pH and explain that a little bit more for our listeners. And there are ways, I think, that they can even change their own body's perception. Not everybody needs to go out and buy a voltmeter, right?
Well, buying the voltmeter doesn't really help you much. But let me ask you this, George. What's the voltage in your thumb at this moment?
In my thumb?
Yep.
I have no idea.
It's minus 20 to 25 millivolts, assuming that it's your thumb's working normally.
Okay.
Now, you hit it with a hammer. Now what happens to the voltage?
I would think it goes down.
No, it goes up.
It does go up.
Because
the body's trying to help it, right?
Yeah. You just destroyed a bunch of cells in your thumb with a hammer.
Okay.
And your body has to make new ones to replace those.
Ah.
So it automatically goes to minus 50.
Okay.
Now, at minus 50 millivolts, there are certain characteristics that happen. First of all, The thumb will have a throbbing pain. So throbbing pain is characteristic of the high voltage. Also, whenever the voltage goes up to 50, it automatically dilates the blood vessels. And the reason that it does that is that you need new raw materials to make those cells to replace the injured ones. And so the blood vessels have to dilate and dump all of the raw materials into the neighborhood so you can use them. Well, when the blood vessels are dilated, your thumb is red. As I mentioned, it's a pulsing pain,
sure,
warm, and it's swollen, and it doesn't work very well. But that has to be that way because you have to be able to get the new raw materials there. So your body gets busy and makes new cells, and pretty soon it has replaced all of those you injured with the hammer. And now your thumb goes back to minus 20 millivolts, and you're a happy camper.
What if it stayed at that other level?
Well, it doesn't normally stay up at the 50 millivolts. The problem is what happens when you either can't get up to minus 50 millivolts because you don't have it stored someplace, or you get up there and you start making cells and then you run out of voltage. When you run out of voltage and you can't achieve 50 millivolts, your voltage drops below operating voltage, and now you're in big trouble. You can only get well by making new cells. You can only make new cells with minus 50 millivolts. So if your thumb drops down to, say, minus 10 millivolts, you have what we would call chronic disease.
I see.
Because it just is incapable of making new cells without enough voltage.
Would you say that people who have cancer probably have a lower voltage?
Yeah, absolutely. Always do. That cancer occurs at plus 30 millivolts. So if we go back to our thumb for just a moment, and then we'll get to the cancer. If you go back to the thumb and say, okay, I'm running at minus 10 millivolts. And so now I have a thumb that is white. It doesn't work very well, and it hurts all the time. So the important thing to realize that if you have pain, pain is simply a symptom of abnormal voltage. If it's a throbbing pain, you're up at minus 50. But most commonly, people walking around with pain, the pain is because the voltage is low. So now we have a different understanding of pain, which means we also have a very powerful way to fix it. If you have pain, all you have to do to get rid of it is insert enough electrons to get the voltage back up into the operating range and then eventually up to minus 50. So
it'll make new cells. How do you do that? You can't go to the electron store. What do you do?
Well, there are things that one can do. For example, we have this device called the biomodulator, which has the ability to both measure and then put it in treatment mode and insert electrons in the correct frequencies that they will resonate with and transfer the electrons to the cell membrane. But before we get to the treatment, let's talk just a little bit, if I may, about the things that happen when voltage drops.
Okay.
Because it explains all of chronic disease. We already discussed that as voltage drops, you get pain. But in addition, if you don't have enough voltage, then the cell can't do whatever it's designed to do, just like your refrigerator won't cool if it only has 50 volts going into it instead of 110.
Right.
So the cells quit their job. But then there are other bad things that happen. One of them has to do with oxygen. If you take a glass of water and you put a tube in it and you start bubbling oxygen into the water, amount of oxygen that will dissolve in the water is dictated by the voltage of the water. Well, cells are 70% water, so that as the voltage drops in the cells, the oxygen actually comes out of solution, and now you have inadequate oxygen in the cell.
And that's a killer.
Well, there are several bad things that happen when you don't have enough oxygen. There is a mechanism in every cell to create energy called ATP. And so if you take and insert a molecule of fat into what's called the Krebs cycle and oxygen is available, you'll get 38 molecules of ATP out the other side. But if for every unit of fat you put in, if oxygen isn't available, you get 2. So it's like having a car that goes from 38 miles to the gallon to 2 miles to the gallon. All of a sudden you have a very inefficient fuel mechanism for your cell. So the cell sitting down here doesn't have enough voltage, and now it doesn't have enough energy, and it that has a high demand for more and more nutrition, which your gut can't provide because it's probably running at 2 millivolts as well.
And this is probably occurring to millions of your cells.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So now you have low voltage, low oxygen, poor metabolism or ability to generate energy from your metabolism. And then finally, each of us contains about a trillion bugs. And all of these bugs are suppressed by oxygen, but as oxygen goes away, these bugs wake up and want to have lunch.
Uh-huh.
They want to have you for lunch. So all of a sudden, these guys wake up and they don't have teeth to take a bite out of your cell, so they put out digestive enzymes to dissolve the cell so they can get the nutrients out.
And so it's all over your body.
And so let's think about a strep bacteria that's having a picnic on your tonsil, and he's there having a good time eating all of the good nutrients out of your tonsil, but of course you sense it as a pain in your throat, because he's destroying those cells.
All right.
But here's the problem. Those digestive enzymes he's using to dissolve your cells get into your bloodstream and go other places. And we all know that strep throat can cause scarring of your heart valves. It can cause scarring in your joints, et cetera. Well, this same mechanism happens all over the body. So you may have bugs having a picnic in your gallbladder, and they're putting out toxins that are damaging your brain. You may have bugs in your large intestine that are damaging your heart, etc.
That's scary.
So wherever the voltage is low, the bugs are always having a picnic. So it's my contention and belief that there is no such thing as an autoimmune disease. And I know that's heresy to say, but let me explain
that. Well, not necessarily. Go ahead.
We call things autoimmune and say the body is attacking itself because some part of the body's malfunctioning, and we go in and take a biopsy, and we look at it. We see tissue destruction. We see inflammation in white blood cells, but when we culture it, we can't find any bugs there causing problems. We can't find anything else there, so we say, well, it looks like the body's attacking itself.
Right.
Well, it's the same mechanism as the strep bacteria having picnic on your tonsil and scarring your heart valves. These digestive enzymes get into the blood and go other places and cause damage and destroy the cells there, just as the strep does on your heart valve. So one of the reasons I can say that is that I've taken a number of patients who have lupus, and I go and they have this abnormal blood test called an ANA test, and you go in and find out where their voltages are low, correct the voltage, and as soon as you correct the voltage, their ANA goes back to normal and they're well. So
that's amazing.
So we have these several different problems going on as voltage drops. We have the pain, we have the decreased oxygen, we have the poor metabolism, so you're tired all the time, and we have the bugs having lunch everywhere, causing havoc and destroying things. So then if voltage continues to drop, when you go past zero and get to plus 30 millivolts, which is electron stealer status, that's where cancer occurs. So cancer always occurs as voltage drops down to plus 30 millivolts.
Okay, and can you, by changing the voltage then, reverse it and kill that cancer off?
Well, Nordenstrom was the first one to show that you could do that. As I mentioned earlier, he's the guy who invented these deep tissue biopsy needles, and he developed this technique where you would go put one of these needles inside the tumor and another needle just somewhere nearby to create a circuit, and then he would hook it up to just a standard machine used in surgery called a Bowie-Cotterie, which just creates voltage. And he would run a circuit through the tumor, and the tumors just melt away. And so he developed this technique and tried to teach it around the world, and when he came to the United States, everybody just said, that's interesting, but of course it didn't go anywhere. It was fairly widely used in Europe, but most of all used in China. The Chinese have treated literally thousands or tens of thousands of patients with Nordenstrom's technique. There's another interesting thing about malignancies, and that is that Dr. Tullio Simoncini, who's a Roman oncologist, has been treating cancer with baking soda.
Yeah.
And, of course, it only works if you can actually get to the tumor. You can't put enough baking soda in the blood to treat just generalized cancer. Just you can't get enough electrons in that way, and it doesn't work to give it IV. But if you can get it, put it right on top of the tumor, then the tumors will just melt away. And again, what you're doing, baking soda is a strong electron donor.
You're drawing electricity to it, I guess.
Well, you're putting electricity in. You're just providing electrons and moving it from plus 30 millivolts back. If you can move the voltage back up to minus 60, the cancer cells will die. This was shown by work by Keith Brewer back in the 80s, or maybe it was late 70s. It's been a long time ago. Brewer just took normal cells and put them in a petri dish and began to drop the voltage. And when they got down to plus 30, they became malignant. Then he put electrons in, and when he got up to minus 60, all the cancer cells died, and the normal ones stayed fine.
What causes, Jerry, someone's cells or organs to lose that voltage?
Perfect. I'm glad you asked that question. Because, you know, when somebody has chronic disease, by definition, the voltage is low. It will always be low. And you can go put in voltage, as we'll discuss more in a minute, but if you don't ask the question, what caused me to lose enough voltage to allow me to get sick, then you simply get sick again.
Yeah, if you have a short circuit in your house, all the power in the world's not going to help you, right?
Right. So here's the thing. You should divide people into two groups, those that have normal total body voltage but a circuit or two out, and those that have low total body voltage, which may or may not have more than one circuit out, because they act completely different. Somebody who has enough voltage in their system to run at 20 millivolts, but just happens to have 5 millivolts running in, say, their heart, is a different patient than somebody who doesn't have enough voltage to run any organ, that they're all just struggling and huffing. So if you look at the thing that controls total body voltage, that is primarily thyroid hormone. So a patient who is hypothyroid, and of course Dr. Starr has discussed before and will perhaps discuss again tonight, that blood tests are often normal even though you're quite hypothyroid.
Yeah.
When you're hypothyroid and you don't have adequate amounts of the hormone called T3, then your system doesn't work because it takes both T3 and adrenaline from your adrenals to start the mechanism that creates energy in your body. And without adequate T3, then you're going to be low total body voltage and you're going to be tired all the time and nothing works well, and you get up in the morning and you're so tired you can't quite...
You feel like you never even had a night's sleep.
Yep, but because you just have to, you push through it, and you do that with your adrenals. And then eventually they give out too. So sort of think of the thyroid and adrenals as two horses pulling a wagon, and you're the wagon. The first horse that lays down is almost always the thyroid horse. And that adrenal horse tries to pull his buddy, the thyroid, and the wagon, but eventually he wears out and lays down too, and now the wagon's not going anywhere. And so you have to get both of those horses back up and going in people who have been sick for a long time, because once you're sick for a while, your adrenals just wear out. So when a person has low total body voltage, and I'm going to tell you and show you in a minute how we measure that, the first thing you have to do is fix thyroid and adrenals, because if you don't, nothing else is going to work. Now, I think perhaps we should review just a little bit about thyroid and preparation of Mark coming on, but the problem is that the pituitary makes thyroid-stimulating hormone, and that causes your thyroid gland to put out primarily what's called T4. And so we docs tend to measure TSH and T4, and if those are normal, we tell you your thyroid's working fine. But that's just part of the problem, because you have to convert T4 into the active form of T3.
But you believe the thyroid is the focal point for this. Basically, it's your voltage regulator.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. So if you can't convert T4 to T3, you can have perfectly normal blood tests, but you're still quite hypothyroid. Well, the conversion process takes iodine, selenium, zinc, iron, progesterone, cortisol, and glutathione. And if you're missing one of those guys, instead of making T3, you make a fake hormone called RT3 or reverse T3. And so there are lots of, almost everybody is deficient in iodine. 80% of the population is deficient in zinc. And, of course, if the adrenals wear out because you haven't had thyroid for a while, then you're going to be deficient in cortisol. And if you don't have thyroid and adrenals, then you're not going to be making progesterone. So there are all sorts of reasons that you can't convert. Now, even if you have all of those but, say, glutathione, it still doesn't work because glutathione is necessary to take electrons from the cell membrane down to the mitochondria. So a lot of people go to see their doc, and they may, let's assume, for example, their blood tests are abnormal, and they put them on thyroid hormone. They usually get put on Synthroid, mm-hmm. which is just synthetic T4. But if they can't convert it to T3, then it's just like taking a sugar pill. It's not going to work. And so I see this day in and day out. People come in on Synthroid, but they're still quite hypothyroid because they can't convert, because they're missing all of those things that I just mentioned.
Well, would you say that everyone who has a voltage problem in their system, it's because they have a thyroid problem?
If their total body voltage is low, that's true.
Total body. Okay.
So if you come, let's say you come in and I measure, and I'm going to tell you in a minute how we measure that, but I measure all of your bioterminals and average them up, and you average out at minus 10 millivolts. You're a thyroid patient until proven otherwise.
Okay.
You know, there are other things. If you're on narcotics or you're on anti-epileptic drugs and other things, then that can be why your voltages are low. But, you know, 98% of the people who walk in the door, it's because their thyroid's not working.
Right. If it's just an isolated problem, like, you know, maybe you've got a problem with your kidney or something.
Okay, you come in and you've got normal total body voltage in every circuit except your kidney. Your kidney circuit's low. And it's running at 5 millivolts. Everything else is running at 25 like it should. That is a dental infection until proven otherwise.
Really?
Yeah. Every tooth is wired into one of these acupuncture circuits. And when you have an infection in the tooth, decay, either primary decay or under a filling or under a crown, or you have infection in a root canal and all root canals are infected, or you have infection in the bone around where you have a root canal, those put out poisons called gliotoxins and thioethers, and they will take down that circuit.
All right, stay with us, Jerry. We're going to come back in a moment. Dr. Mark Starr is going to join us as well as we talk about healing his voltage on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. We've got Dr. Mark Starr with us now. He is a board certified by the American Board of Pain Medicine and the Arizona State Board of Homeopathic Medical Examiners. He has published his book called Hypothyroidism Type 2, The Epidemic. It is a movie as well. And here he is on Coast to Coast back. Mark, how are you?
Fine, thanks, George. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be on with you and Jerry Tennant.
Jerry is with us as well. And let's both talk, if we can, together about this incredible story that Jerry has brought to us, Mark, and that is healing and voltage. Of course, you've known all along that the thyroid was the root of many problems, haven't you?
Well, I would say I learned that with my 10 years of research that I did while writing my book, basically. It took 6 years to write the book. And I had a wonderful teacher who knew the blood test didn't work. So most of the credit goes to my teachers, but I made it my business to put the best research that was ever done on thyroid in my book.
Tell me how you discovered Dr. Tennant's work and how that ties in with your work.
Well, I had another friend who's a physician say he knew I was moving to Arizona and starting another pain clinic. And he said, before you start your clinic, you need to go study with Jerry Tennant because he has some new approaches to pain medicine. And I did so. And Dr. Tennant had been studying voltage for a number of years. And I'd been studying thyroid for a number of years, and he didn't know that the thyroid wasn't being diagnosed or treated properly, and I had no idea about voltage. In medical school, all they taught us with this was that the cells work about minus 22 millivolts, and that was it. And when I went to buy the biomodulator that he used for the voltage, included in the price is a three-day lecture by Dr. Tennant, and it was an eye-opening experience, to say the least. And as a real life experience, I had tried everything I could possibly do for 11 years, and I was an integrated medicine doctor in private practice, and I had done all sorts of things, including getting the metal out of my mouth. Now, let me say that medical doctors and dentists are taught nothing about energy medicine, and Dr. Tennant's work is very much of a paradigm-shifting type of research that would change the way doctors view all illnesses and how they treat patients. So it's not the medical doctor's or dentist's fault. But I was still having chronic pain issues, well, mild pain, but mostly fatigue and low energy. And Dr. Tennant taught me to use a voltmeter in my mouth, or at least to check my patients. Well, after I finished the three-day lecture, number one, we had a biomodulator during the 3 days, and I was able to increase my voltage, which had been low, quite a bit. And I felt like a new man after just 3 days of increasing my voltage. And at that time, they had a back order on the biomodulator, so I had to go back to Atlanta where I was practicing at the time without one. And I felt like someone had thrown water on me like the Wicked Witch of the West because I was melting without my voltage again. But when I went to Radio Shack and bought my $29.95 multimeter and put it in my own mouth to begin with, I thought it was broken because every one of my teeth measured 150 to 200 millivolts. And I thought, well, this can't be. But I had a friend, and I started measuring his voltage, and it was normal. And it didn't take very long for me to call Dr. Tennant, and I had had gum graft surgery and scars across both top and bottom gums. Well, guess what? Scars block the energy flow and leak voltage. And had I not run into Dr. Tennant, I would probably be a goner by now, because Dr. Tennant has seen that previously, and he has a device that attaches to the biomodulator, and I was able to raise the voltage in my gums over a period of months so that they would heal and stop leaking voltage.
You really think you would have died, Mark?
Oh, I had a terrible problem with fungus that had taken over the whole bottom of one foot, including all of my toes, and it was rotten to the core from the blocked energy in my body and the low voltage. When you're low enough in voltage, fungus moves in, and as Dr. Tennant said, Dr. Simoncini has a good book called Cancer as a Fungus. So I was treating that with iodine and all sorts of potions until I managed to clear it up with the voltage in Dr. Tennant's research. So I think I feel so well now, I'm relatively certain that in decades from now, it will be shown that having normal voltage in your meridians and the energy pathways, along with proper nutrition, will be the key to healthy living and longevity. And I feel so well now for the first time in many decades. I had lots of health problems, which is why I got into this, just like Dr. Tennant, that I feel strong enough and well enough and have a busy enough practice, thanks to you, that I'm looking for a younger woman to start a family. So I thought I'd put that out there because it's hard to meet younger women, but I'm as healthy as a horse these days.
Now we're opening up a dating service here, Mark. Jerry, this ability, we haven't talked about yet is how you increase the voltage once you realize it's out of whack. What do you do?
Well, the easiest way to do it is to use the biomodulator, which is a device that's about the size of a computer mouse, has an electrode on one side and controls on the other, which allows you to go measure and then switch it into treatment mode and treat the areas. So, for example, there happens to be a terminal, which I call a bioterminal, in each region of the body. So for your head, if you'll put your finger just sort of above and between your eyebrows, that's the front, and on the back, right at the base of your skull. So anything that goes on, goes wrong in your skull, you will measure that one or both of those points have low voltage. And you measure it by simply putting the biomodulator into the assess mode, press it onto that point, and it tells you what the voltage is. Then there's, if you put your finger at the top of your breastbone and then at the bump at the bottom of your neck, those are the two terminals that take voltage to everything in your neck and your upper chest. So if you've got a problem in that area, one of those two will measure low. If you take and find the point that's halfway between the top and bottom of your breastbone and then a point that's straight through your chest from there, that controls your chest. So if you've got trouble in your lower lungs or in your heart or anything else in the chest area, one of those two will measure low. If you take and feel the point between the bottom of your breastbone and your belly button, and then go one straight through, which is at the bottom, next to the last rib, that has to do with what's going on in your belly. So if you've got problems in your belly, one of those two places will measure low. And for pelvis, it's one just above your pubic bone, and then on the back, it's what's called L2, which is just a little bit below. It's about your waistline.
I've got a friend who fell back in November. He's still paralyzed from the neck down. He did not sever anything. He bruised his spinal cord, and he just can't move, Jerry. Would increasing, I would assume his voltage is way out of whack. Is that a pretty good guess?
Yeah. Anybody who has chronic disease of any kind is going to have low voltage, just the way it is.
So if he increased his voltage, maybe in his spine, would that help him?
Most likely. It takes, what you're trying to do is put in enough voltage to get up to minus 50 so you have the horsepower to make new cells, and you have to have the raw materials there so you can make those cells.
But you don't want to keep it at minus 50, do you?
No, and the body generally won't keep it up there after it makes the cells that it needs. So it's a matter of, finding the areas that are low. And so, having a device that allows us to measure that is marvelous because it allows us to go figure out what's going on.
What are some of the mainstream doctors saying about your theories, your work, Jerry?
Well, it's an interesting thing to observe. Most of the time when docs get out of medical school and residency training, they are pretty confident that they know how things work and what to do about it. After docs have been in practice for 20 or 30 years and they themselves start getting sick, they begin to realize that, maybe this isn't working as well as I had hoped. And then they become more open to thinking about a new paradigm. So docs like Mark and me that have been around a while, are much more likely to have an open mind that there's a different way of doing things.
The ability of the body to fix itself. Mark, I remember you told us to put a thermometer under the armpit and, read certain time, certain temperatures. You'd be able to decide and ascertain just what was wrong with your thyroid, if it was working or not, right?
Yes, that research was done by Broda Barnes, for whom a research foundation is named, BrodaBarnes.org. And he determined that the basal temperature was the best way to diagnose low thyroid, because it's so closely related to our metabolism. Our metabolic rate is what the thyroid controls. So the normal temperature is 97.8 to 98.2 under your arm when you first awaken in the morning. And centigrade, that's 36.6 to 36.8. I know you have a lot of Canadian listeners being inundated with their emails after the last show. Women have to do it who are menstruating during days 2, 3, and 4 of their menstrual cycle. Pretty much everyone else can do it at any time.
So if you simply take and measure these terminals, which takes just a few minutes, and all of them are low, then you're obligated to prove or disprove hypothyroidism, and it's almost always going to be true that they're hypothyroid. And as you correct their thyroid function, then you'll see the voltages in those terminals come up. And, of course, as the voltage comes up, then the body has the ability to go heal itself.
Now, Jerry, you do not treat cancer, do you?
That's correct.
Well, tell me why not.
Well, a variety of reasons, but, anyone who treats cancer in this country and doesn't follow the traditional way of doing it is certainly going to have all sorts of grief from the from official medicine.
Well, that's true.
Isn't it true, Dr. Tennant, that it's against law to treat cancer with anything except radiation and chemo and surgery?
Well, I don't know that there's a law on any book that you can go read, but de facto, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
They want you to try the chemo or the radiation, and they don't want you to experiment with anything else.
Well, you know, you can see that that's the case because our FDA requires a what's called a double-blind placebo crossover study for all of the new drugs approved, with the exception of cancer. So if I have a new diabetes drug, I have to give that drug to some to half of the people and a placebo to half the people and then switch. But the FDA will not allow such studies to be done for cancer. So we are never able to compare chemotherapy with other types of things, so the FDA won't allow it.
Now, Jerry, tell me the difference between the biomodulator and the biotransducer.
Well, the biomodulator is the power system that puts out frequencies that are the type of frequency that will resonate with the cell membrane and thus transfer the electrons. And it does it by having an electrode on the back that you simply press onto the tissue over these bioterminals that I was telling you about, that I showed you where they were.
Right.
Now, if you think about, let's think about the door that goes into your office there. If I put an electrode on both sides of the of your wooden door, nothing's going through. It won't measure anything because it's wood.
Right.
If I shine a light on it, it won't go through. But if I put a magnet on each side of the door, those two magnets will stick to each other, won't they?
If it's strong enough, sure.
Yeah, right through the door.
Yeah.
So what the biotransducer does is it creates a magnetic field. And the reason that's important is because wherever in the body the voltage is low, it's also creating a magnetic field. So you can find the areas that are low voltage and thus not functioning by simply identifying the magnetic field. So when you, if I have a magnet in my right hand and a magnet in my left hand and I run my hands close to each other, you'll feel them grab, right?
Mm-hmm.
You do that with a biotransducer. You simply run it over the body, and when you get over an area that has low voltage and is thus sick, you'll feel it stick to it.
Really? Okay.
And then you just hold it there, and the magnetic field puts the biomodulator frequencies through that magnetic field, just like it does through your door, down deep into the tissue. And then as soon as the voltage is up to normal, the magnetic field in the tissue disappears, and you'll feel it release. And so it's a very, it's more efficient way, and it also helps to get things deeper. So, for example, it's my favorite way of treating brains and hearts and, you know, deep back pains and that sort of thing, because you can get the electron transfer so much quicker than you can through the acupuncture meridians.
Have you done any studies, blind studies yet with this?
Well, we currently have a pain study being performed at one of the major Army hospitals. That study is expected to be finished in the next month or so. There was a pain study done with at the University of Louisiana that's been published showing the pain. And, of course, the FDA has already looked at the device and said that it's useful for chronic intractable pain and postoperative pain.
I mean, we don't want you to go the way of Royal Rife.
Right.
You know, and they tend to go after people who come up with novel ideas.
Well, the device is has been evaluated by the FDA, and we have their certification for what I just mentioned. And, of course, it's always difficult to change any paradigm in any field. And, of course, what we're talking about here is a totally different way of thinking about things, isn't it?
Sure is. Now, Mark, what is it about the thyroid that, you know, is really like the power plant of the body?
It's responsible for close to 90% of the energy production in the body. One of the things I'm most proud of was having read 100 years worth of thyroid research. I heard a lecture about mitochondria, which are the little cellular things in the body that produce most of the energy. There are hundreds or thousands in every cell that produce the energy. And when I heard a lecture about mitochondria, it was the same thing I'd been reading about on low thyroid. And Dr. Tennant said he just about fell out of his chair when he read my book on the research on mitochondria, because that and low thyroid are one and the same. Animals and their whole biochemistry departments devoted to the study of mitochondria and all sorts of diseases of aging and illnesses are now attributed to mitochondrial disease, but that is simply hypothyroidism. And I'm very pleased that Dr. Tennant picked up the ball and ran with it, because I think I have the best research scientist on the planet on my side now, and he is telling me how the thyroid works these days, and I'm very grateful that he keeps me apprised of all the things that he learns, because I need to go study with him every 3 to 6 months to catch up with everything he's figured out.
Keep tuned up, huh?
Yeah, he's really incredible, and I'm very proud to be a part. My third time down there to study, he has something, I'm not sure, I didn't see in his latest workbook, but he had something called the Tennant Rules, at least when we started studying with each other, and it doesn't matter what's wrong with your body, if you follow his set of rules, you get well. And about my third time down in Dallas to study with him, his nurse greeted me at the door when I came in and said, "Dr. Starr, you made the rules." So I was very proud of the fact that I was on the list of, you know, treating, replacing thyroid and iodine properly, made his list of.
All right, stay with us. We're going to take some quick phone calls when we come right back with both of you on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Jerry, are other doctors getting on this bandwagon? What do you think?
Oh, sure. It seems to me that there's more and more interest in this sort of subject all the time. So I'm encouraged by that. George, do I have time to mention a couple of other really important things?
Yeah, sure.
One of the problems that people have, and actually one of the things that put me in bed for 7 years, was root canal. A root canal tooth is a dead tooth. The way you do a root canal is you drill a hole in the tooth and you reach in with an auger and you rip out the artery and the nerve and kill the tooth. Now, the dentists are the only physicians who purposely leave dead tissue in the body, and it's a problem because everybody knows that dead tissue always gets infected. Dentists will sometimes tell you that they put stuff down into the tooth to keep it from getting infected, but that's simply wishful thinking, because there are arteries and nerves coming into the very tips of the roots of the tooth where you can't, the dentist can't get to them, and they always get infected. And work at the University of Kentucky has shown that one root canal tooth shuts down 63% of your immune system. And so what we're finding is that many of the people who have been sick for a long time, it's because of the poisons put out by that dead tissue.
Sure. Well, you know, in the old days, Jerry, as you know, dentists would insist that patients take an antibiotic pill if they had heart murmurs or any problems prior to even a teeth cleaning.
Right. And so we're, you know, it's become quite clear, and the evidence, the science is there to show that infections in the mouth cause all sorts of illnesses. And what I find is that probably 60 or 70% of people walk in my door that have been sick for 5 or 10 years. It's because of infections in their mouth. And so if I can't get them to go get their mouth cleaned up, they just don't get well. So I want to emphasize how important dental is, and Mark actually talked about that, his personal experience with that. And mm-hmm. I had a root canal tooth in one of the circuits that takes voltage to my brain. And so because of that root canal, I spent 7 years in bed and lost my career in ophthalmology. So it's an important thing you can't overlook. Second thing is stomach acid. Stomach acid is amazingly important for health. One of the things people have to realize is that a human is designed to never, ever absorb proteins. Now, of course, a protein is made up of a bunch of little particles called amino acids. So the way things are supposed to work is that you eat a protein, your stomach acid breaks it down into amino acids. Those amino acids go downstream and get absorbed, and your body makes its own proteins from those amino acids. Well, if you eat a protein and you don't have enough stomach acid and one of those proteins goes downstream and gets absorbed into your blood, the body says, hey, I didn't make that protein. It must be a virus. And so it develops antibodies and attacks it. So very quickly you become allergic to all of the foods you normally eat. And so after every meal you get tired because you're basically having a mini flu because your immune system's attacking everything you just ate. And, of course, if you make cells out of those proteins, now your immune system is sitting there attacking, continuing to try to attack those proteins. And so that's a big problem, and the allergies that people have to their foods can make them have almost any symptom. It's it's almost exactly the same symptoms you have from hypothyroidism. Now, there's another problem, and that is when you don't have stomach acid, you can't absorb zinc. And if you don't have zinc, you can't make neurochemicals, and so you're going to become depressed. So essentially, everybody who's taking pills to shut down their stomach acid will eventually become depressed.
Interesting.
And, of course, the way the stomach acid is also supposed to kill the bugs that come in with your food so that they don't get down into the system where you have less defense. And another thing is that every time you make a molecule of hydrochloric acid, your body puts a molecule of bicarbonate into your blood. So whenever you eat something, no matter what it is, or drink something, your stomach automatically tries to go to a pH of 2, which is very acidic, of course, which means it's dumped a lot of bicarbonate into your blood. Now as the food goes downstream and gets into your small intestine, the pancreas takes it up to a pH of 8. Well, when the pancreas does it, puts bicarbonate into the gut, it's simultaneously putting hydrochloric acid into your blood. Well, if your stomach put bicarbonate into the blood and now the pancreas puts hydrochloric acid in the blood, they neutralize each other and all is good. That's the way it's supposed to work. But if you didn't put bicarbonate in, if your stomach didn't put bicarbonate into your blood, and now your pancreas is putting hydrochloric acid in your blood, all of a sudden your voltage drops. So one of the causes of low voltage is not having stomach acid. So it's extremely important that people have normal stomach acid. So why don't they have it? Well, to make stomach acid requires our old friend iodine. It requires zinc, vitamin B1, and then, of course, salt and water. But being iodine deficient and often zinc deficient is the primary reason people don't have stomach acid. So the summary of things that I want to be sure people have understood is that all chronic disease is defined by having low voltage. If you got a problem, you got low voltage. So what are the major causes of low voltage? Hypothyroidism.
Well, and let me ask you this first, Jerry.
Yep.
Does low voltage create the problem, or
yep.
does the problem create low voltage?
Well, the problem in the organ is because the voltage is low because it can't make new cells and repair itself. And as we discussed, when the voltage drops, then you don't have oxygen, the bugs start having a picnic, et cetera, et cetera.
But what comes first? I mean, if voltage goes down for whatever reason.
Usually it comes because you're hypothyroid or you've got a dental infection or you don't have stomach acid.
Okay, those three things.
So those are the main things. And, of course, one of the things we really haven't touched on here because Mark did it before is that a lot of the hypothyroidism is due to fluoride because, you know, a thyroid molecule is a protein with four iodines on it. And whenever you have fluoride and iodine in the same neighborhood, the fluoride is a bully and always pushes the iodine out of the way and takes its place. So now you have a hormone with a protein with four fluorides on it, which doesn't work. But in addition, fluoride directly damages the thyroid gland. And fluoride does all sorts of other bad things to all different organs, but fluoride is certainly not your friend.
I would agree with that.
So that's. I wanted to be sure we got those things in tonight because they're so important.
Okay, well, we've got a whole list of phone calls for both of you, so let's go to them. Carol is in Mississippi, east of the Rockies. Carol, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Good evening. I was so glad that you have these guys on again tonight, George, Dr. Starr. I've had most of these problems, and just now talking about the dental, what did you just talk about? The
thyroid?
No, when you have to put the metal into the tooth.
The fillings or the root canal?
The root canal. I have had numerous root canals, and I was treated with tetracycline until I was almost 8 years old and had my tonsils out. So I've had, like, chronic dental disease, and it's just been a torture. And about 5 years ago, I was in the point you were talking about, where you were saying you were on you're lying there and you felt, you know, this was it. I don't have any energy. I couldn't get up to the point where I actually did test low on a thyroid test. So I guess I must have been pretty bad off. But what do you do? You said one of the main things is to get the metal out of your mouth. I mean, do you try to get dentists to take the things they put in your mouth out, or is there alternative dentist that does not do the traditional therapies, or is that possible to get?
Well, most dentists will take the mercury fillings out of your mouth, for example, or do that. But you got to be careful how that's done. You don't want the particles to go down into your system. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, it is true that when you just simply brush on to a mercury filling, it outgasses and just mm-hmm. like brushing your teeth. So when you go to the dentist to have your mercury fillings removed, you have to be sure that the dentist will give you an auxiliary air supply, so you're breathing air that comes through a tube and not the mercury-filled air coming out of your own mouth. In addition, you'll want them to use what's called a rubber dam, which is just a sheet of rubber, and they poke the tooth through that. So then the little flakes of mercury are captured by that rubber so you don't swallow them. So it's important when you make an appointment to have your mercury fillings out to ask your dentist, will you give me an air supply and will you use a rubber dam? And if they say, oh, it's not important, go find another dentist because it is important.
So I'm at the point where I actually have teeth that are almost totally gone, and because I've had so many problems with the root canals and the caps, I've almost hesitated to go to the dentist. So at this point, what about, is there any type of tooth replacement, like the caps or things that they're making now that could be put in that are non-metallic, or do you just have to have all your teeth pulled out? Or?
Well, look, here's the problem. A root canal tooth is always infected, period. And one tooth shuts down 63% of your immune system. So if your big toe dies and I don't amputate it, you're going to die from gangrene, aren't you?
Right.
If your appendix dies and you don't amputate it, you're going to die from peritonitis. So when you have dead tissue in the body, it's mandatory that it comes out. Now, a dead tooth takes longer to do you in, but it eventually will do it. So it's, the key is get all the infection out of your mouth. And the problem with a root canal is the longer it stays there, the more likely the infection is to spread to the bones surrounding the tooth. So now you go in and pull a root canal tooth, but you haven't solved the problem because all of the bone around there is now infected. So now you got to go in and scrape all of that infected bone out and then put enough voltage in that the area can heal. So there are some dentists around that understand acupuncture and the kinds of things we're talking about. And there are dentists around that refuse to do root canals, but they're hard to find. So you just have to do a little work. But it's a common problem in my office, and I'm sure it is in Mark's as well, and that is, patient comes in, you say, well, I've got a root canal in this tooth, and they say, well, if I have that tooth pulled, then I'll look funny. And my response to that is, you'll look funny if you die from cancer, won't you? Because that's where you're headed with leaving infection in your mouth. And as far as what you can do about it, the most common way to fix the area where the tooth was pulled is just to use a bridge, have the dentist build a bridge and put in there, and it looks just fine. People are interested in, well, can I use an implant? Well, a lot of that's determined by whether or not you have infection up in the bone, because if all the bone is all mushy and infected, an implant won't hold in there, and so it can't be placed. Another thing is that the implants, most of the implants that they use have titanium pegs on them. The titanium metal always attracts infection, so most of the titanium implants over a period of time are prone to get infected into the bone. And again, infection is our real enemy. Now, the newer implants have pegs on them that are made of synthetic diamond, zirconium. We've been using those in this country a couple of years or so, and it seems that those are much less likely to get infected. They're a little harder to get to seat correctly because the diamond tends to be a little slick and the bone doesn't grab onto it as easily, but there's some enthusiasm among biological dentists that those are going to work out. So did I answer your question?
Yeah, Mark, and also if people are diabetic, does that mean their voltage is out of whack?
Well, once again, Dr. Broda Barnes found most diabetics to be low thyroid. And I have found that to be the case as well. And by treating their thyroid properly, none of his diabetic patients had any amputations or kidney failure and all the problems that are normally due to accelerated hardening of the arteries from being low thyroid. So,
of course, we come back to if they are hypothyroid, by definition, they'll be low voltage.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to California, west of the Rockies. Javier, you're with us. Hi there.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I'd like to know if you could answer a question for me. So this is very interesting what you're talking about with the teeth and mercury and all that. I've been suffering with the problem for many years with epilepsy. And does that have anything to do with the low voltage?
That's for you, Jerry.
Sure. If you have a chronic disease, your voltage is low. So then the issue is, why is your voltage low and where is it low? And so we would want to go through, you know, and measure the bioterminals on the front and back of your skull and find out which of those or whether both of them are low. And then, of course, determine if you're low voltage all over. So we'd have know whether to look at your thyroid function and your adrenal function, et cetera. And then one has to, find the areas in the brain that are low and bring the voltages up so they can start making new cells. And then look at the circuits that are going up there and see if you have some, you know, if we can figure out why the voltage dropped to enough to allow you to start having that problem. Sometimes, of course, epilepsy comes after an injury, so one would look, you know, ask you questions about that and look for those issues. Sometimes there's heavy metal poisoning, et cetera. So, you know, there's a kind of a checklist of things we'd have to go through to figure it out. But you can be sure that if you have some chronic thing going on, the voltage is abnormal. And you can also be sure that you're not going to get it fixed unless you can get the voltage high enough to make new cells. Does that help, Javier?
Jerry, are there doctors that you can go to get this treatment? This biomodulator treatment,
or
there are, okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a list of them on your website, or how do you find them?
Well, the most of them have asked that we just call the Synergy Medical, which is the distributor. They keep a list of doctors who will accept patients, and so you can call them 972-580-0545 and ask them if they have someone in their database that's close to you.
All right, and do you have their website on your website?
No, the majority of doctors who use that have preferred that we not just put a list on the website.
Okay. All right. And in terms of treatment costs for people, does insurance pick that up or what?
Well, it depends. For people who have pain, because the biomodulator has been examined by the FDA and said that it should be used for pain, then people who have pain as their primary problem, sometimes insurance will cover it. But if you come in and say, you know, I'm here because I've got stomach ache, and I fix it with a biomodulator, the insurance company is going to say, I don't have any idea what you're talking about. We're not going to pay for that.
And they may not even know what a biomodulator is.
That's true.
Probably happens time and time again. Mark, what's new with you and hypothyroidism, the movie?
I wasn't aware of a movie.
I thought you did a little documentary on that. You're on YouTube.
Oh, actually, it was another gentleman who did that with my permission.
Okay. Okay.
And, no fancy movie.
Nope, but in terms of the book, which I think has done very well, hasn't it?
I had sold about 15,000 in 5 years before I was on your show, and after I was on your show in March, I sold about 10,000 in 6 or 7 weeks.
Good for you. Good for you. Well, both of you stay with us. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to get to all your phone calls. Those of you who are on hold, we shall do it with our two special guests tonight, Dr. Mark Starr and, of course, Jerry Tennant. Dr. Tennant, the healing is voltage. His thoughts, his theories on just how every cell in the body is designed to run at a certain voltage level. And when it's not, that's when you get sick. That's when you get chronic disease. So we'll be back in a moment. The rest of your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Jerry, have you measured all major organs of the body and you know what their voltage should be?
Well, all of them run at the same voltage.
Oh, they do?
Yeah, every cell in the body is designed to run between minus 20 and minus 25 millivolts in adults.
Well, that makes it easy then, doesn't it?
Yeah, and now kids will run closer to 30, 35 millivolts, or very athletic adults will, but all all of the cells run at the same voltage.
Have you ever noticed anybody who can physically change their voltage with thought?
I haven't actually measured, done that experiment to measure them and have them think about it and see if we could change it. But one of the things I would tell you, share with you, is this. And I was discussing this with Dr. Starr previously. If you almost always, as I mentioned, the thyroid goes down and then you use your adrenals to push through the day, and then eventually they go down. So you'll occasionally see somebody with the thyroid down and the adrenals still working, even though most of the time it's both of them down. But if you see somebody with the thyroid normal and the adrenals down, that's almost always an emotional issue. Now, our emotions, our personalities are developed actually during the 9 months of pregnancy. What happens is that at the 32-cell stage, the embryo develops a thickening called the neural plate. And almost immediately, which is very, very early in the pregnancy, that begins to respond to its environment, which is mom. So if mom puts out happy hormones, the embryo's happy. If mom puts out angry hormones, the embryo becomes angry, et cetera. And so we develop our pattern of how we respond to our environment actually during those 9 months. And then that is like a DVD player that plays 24 hours a day for the rest of our life.
Yeah, that's true.
Without any knobs on it. So Dr. DeRusso has actually figured out a way to go back and put knobs on that DVD and re-record those things. And I do that regularly in my office. And so when I see people who have these emotional things, I go back and work with them for usually 20, 30 minutes. We'll fix it. And that does indeed change the voltage.
Fascinating. Okay, let's take some more calls. We'll go to Lakewood, Colorado, west of the Rockies. Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, George.
Sure thing.
Dr. Starr?
Yes.
I have hypothyroidism for the last 10 years. I've been seeing a VA doctor. I'm having sleep deprivation for like 5 to 6 years now. I can't get any help from these doctors. I have an appointment with you in January, but at this point, being out of school, I don't have any money. So I'm unemployed at this time. Still trying to get work. You know, don't mean to sound like a sob story, but I was wondering, never know until you ask, there might be some simple answer to this. Do you have anything to add? What I have to do is take myself off the medication a little bit, enough to get into the REM. And after I'm off it for like 3 to 4 days, I start to sleep maybe 3 or 4 hours straight. And it's ruined me.
And tell me what medication you're speaking of that you have to get off.
Right now, Cytomel, 75 milligrams, and that's basically what I'm on.
Ah.
And I tried Armor, which worked well until after about 6 months I started getting heat sensitivity. I don't know. Of course, it knocked off my testosterone levels. I have to take a shot every 2 weeks.
Well, gosh, there are so many things.
Yeah.
Have you measured the thyroid antibodies?
That's what I asked doctors to do, and they tend to refuse. They just want to do the standard 3T4 TSH.
What would that test do, Mark?
Well, I have to admit, I think I was a little bit remiss because I didn't go over the treatment of Hashimoto's, which is thyroid antibodies, the body's attacking its own thyroid gland. Most people and doctors don't have access to all the wonderful things Dr. Tennant has, and those patients often don't tolerate the desiccated thyroid because it's exactly the same composition as their own thyroid. So I had a doctor call from Canada, and she wasn't too pleased because her 70-year-old diabetic woman had asked her to please put her on desiccated thyroid. She started retaining fluid and getting worse instead of better, and I asked her if she checked her antibodies, and she said, well, that wasn't in your book. So I now have something on my website under treatment to cover the Hashimoto's. But I would recommend everybody read Dr. Tennant's book. I didn't hear that mentioned yet. He goes over almost everything that can be wrong with the body in his book. I think it should change the way medicine, it should, it may not, because of all the dogma and so on. But I don't know, George, if you know about Dr. Tennant's book. It's now available, and you should have it.
Yeah, we talked about it the first hour before.
Oh, you did. Oh, I missed that. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
But he covers many more things than I do in his book. And, you know, it has to do with teeth. It has to do with infections. It has to do with having enough fat to store voltage. I didn't hear Dr. Tennant speak about the good fats yet.
Well, what do you recommend Paul do? Little old Paul.
Well, he's welcome to come see me.
Is there a particular time of day or time of night that you wake up, or is it that you just can't go to sleep?
I have a problem initiating sleep. And then if once I do, I only sleep for maybe an hour or two, a cat nap, and I get up.
Maybe adrenals, huh, Jerry?
I had him check the cortisol, the baseline, and of course, this has been years ago. That was okay. I told him check for Schmidt syndrome or Addison's, and they just don't seem to care to do any of the other tests.
Well, I'm sorry. That's
and,
people who wake up about 2 a.m. after just a few hours of sleep typically have adrenal deficiency because that's when the adrenal hormones bottom out, and the adrenal tests are not all that accurate, just like the thyroid test. So, and 75, you said 75 micrograms of Cytomel?
Right.
Yeah, that is a big dose.
Yeah.
For instance, the average adult dose of the desiccated thyroid is 3 grains, and there are only 27 micrograms of Cytomel in the 3 grains of thyroid.
Yeah, I was taking Armour. It was of 120 milligram of that.
2 grains.
The grain is what, 60 milligram?
Yeah.
Yeah, 1 grain.
Well,
I am just, you know, I don't want to.
I would recommend checking
that
the thyroid antibodies.
Hold on, you guys. You're stepping on each other. So you go ahead, Jerry.
I was just going to say there's sometimes this works, and it's, you know, until you can get in to see Mark and get worked up. There, we have some essential oil blends that will help with each of those terminals that we talked about. And then there's one called Sweet Dreams that often will help get people off to sleep when you're brain just is chattering and won't shut down.
Jerry, one of the big problems, a lot of people are just chronically fatigued, like Paul. They have all kinds of problems. Again, voltage?
Yep. Yep. And voltage, and of course, as I think you figured out from what Mark and I are both saying, is that when the thyroid is low, the voltage is low, and then right behind that comes the adrenal failure. So you'll have to fix both of those. And then, of course, a lot of people, when they feel bad and their voltage is low, their digestion isn't working because they have low voltage in the gut, so they're not absorbing nutrients.
It seems too simple, is it?
Well, it's simple, but most truths are simple, aren't they?
Yeah.
But what I was suggesting is that one of the things, you know, essential oils are very powerful, and they do something we haven't gotten into tonight.
And what do you mean by essential oils?
Well, if you take a plant and you expose it to pressure and carbon dioxide, then the fats in the plant will come out as an oil, and those are called essential oils. And they are one of the oldest forms of medicine. For example, in the Bible, it talks about the three wise men bringing frankincense and myrrh to the Christ child.
Sure.
The frankincense is an essential oil. Myrrh is an essential oil. And so the plants have molecules that run at the same frequency as the human. So when you take these concentrated oils out of the plants and put them on the human, they will help correct the frequencies in the various organs. And so you can take people that, you know, can't lift their arm and put essential oils on them, and 5 minutes later their arm works fine. So there are some dramatic things you can accomplish with oils, and So I was just suggesting that that's a possible solution to give him some relief until he can get in where Mark can actually work him up and figure out what's really going on.
Yeah, and you guys are very closely related to the thoughts of Edgar Cayce. You know, when he was doing his readings and he came up with some of his holistic suggestions, he used to talk about radionics, for example. You know, the ability, the voltage again in your system, very close. I mean, you're probably onto something, Jerry.
Well, it's been working for quite a long time. I've been doing this about 10 years, a little over 10 years now, and it works every day.
All right, next up, it's Elizabeth's turn in Ontario on the international line. Hello, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Good evening, George and doctors. I have a question about something you were talking about earlier. You were saying that Synthroid, people that take Synthroid often don't convert to T3, a problem that a lot of us have. We still can't lose weight because we can't make the T3 with the Synthroid. Can't tolerate the natural Synthroid, the natural desiccated thyroid. What would you suggest to bring up the T3 in a case like that?
That's for you, Mark.
Oh, Dr. Tennant's done more research than I. He teaches me that glutathione
does he? All right.
And all
right.
Sorts of stuff. I'd let him in.
Take it away, Jerry.
Well, the conversion process requires at least these things: iodine, selenium, zinc, iron, progesterone.
Do you do that in a supplement form?
Yeah. And cortisol and glutathione. So if you, the way I do it in my office, you can tell, for example, if you're selenium or zinc depleted by just putting a drop of those on your tongue, and if it tastes terrible, then you have enough, and if it doesn't, then you need some. So it's a quick and easy way to figure out if you're zinc and selenium depleted. Everybody is iodine depleted unless you eat seaweed every day, so obviously you're going to need that. And then as far as the cortisol, you can tell generally by looking at the blood pressure, and I use a questionnaire to look at hormones. By the way, this is something anybody can do. If you go to my website and go to the link for patient forms and download my patient registration form, within that are some questionnaires about hormones. And if you go through and answer those and you have any score that's in the 20s, you've got a problem with that one. So it's something that's easy for you to do to figure out if you've got that problem. So if you've got a score, the high score for adrenals, then you're going to obviously need that. And then as far as glutathione is concerned, glutathione is something you can't take in a pill form because it's not absorbed. It's made from 3 amino acids, and so if you have stomach acid and are digesting your proteins, you'll make glutathione, and that system will work. If it doesn't, there are pills that you can take that have the 3 amino acids in them, or something that works for glutathione. I use the one called OSR for people that where I need to be sure that their glutathione is working. So I guess what the answer to your question is, you've just got to be sure you have that list of things. I tend to give people iodine, a thing called hyposupport, and then the adrenal, desiccated adrenal, and then if I need to, the OSR, and that way I'm sure they're going to convert.
All right.
Does that help?
Thank you very much.
All right.
Very helpful.
So a lot of these, though, you can do in a supplement form, right,
yep.
Jerry?
Yep, absolutely.
All right, let's go to Bruce in Pennsylvania. There you go, Bruce, you're up. Go ahead.
Yes, doctor. I was wondering, has this been tried by the military, or would you consider trying this by the military or something like that, where building blocks are not a problem?
Well, we do have one of the major military hospitals, Army hospitals, is actually in the middle of a study for pain. And that study will be complete probably in the next month or two and then be published. It's difficult to get big organizations to try something different. We're hopeful that once we've proven that it works for pain, that they'll take a look at using it for other illnesses, but who knows?
Okay, back to the more of the calls. We'll go to Brenda in Houston. You're up with us, first-time caller. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, George. Back in 1999, my husband and I lost triplets to a disease called Candida chorioamnionitis. And then in 2002, I developed another rare disease called neurosarcoidosis, where I had a brain lesion under my brain. And then after that, they reduced all that with steroids, high-dose steroids. And then in 2008, I mysteriously developed scoliosis, severe scoliosis. And I've had many root canals. And I also have gastrointestinal problems. I take Nexium. And I thought I heard the doctor say that he was in Dallas. And I was wondering if there's a way I can get to see him, or if I can't get an appointment with him, what can I do to try to get some of this stuff? I mean, I get the...
All right, well, let's find out. Jerry, do you take patients?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to help you with this problem. All you need to do is call my office, and that number is 972-580-1156.
You better do that one more time, Jerry.
972-580-1156.
And I'll get the websites out once again. They're linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Dr. Jerry Tennant's website is tennantinstitute.com, T-E-N-N-A-N-T. Institute.com, Mark Starrs, 21stcenturymed.com. Let's go to another call before the break. We'll go to Jan in Brooklyn. Hey, Jan, go ahead.
Hi. I have a comment and a question.
All right.
And I agree totally with Dr. Tennant that voltage is the key. And I have a lot of I have a couple of electromagnetic machines that have helped me unbelievably. Like, I got a relapse of polio and I couldn't walk. And just by turning on a radionics with the polio frequency, I was able to walk and I'm practically fine now. It's really amazing.
Good for you.
And also, thanks. And also, my girlfriend had low thyroid and luckily she's going to be okay. And she developed cancer. So, you know, there was a link, probably there is a link there. And my question is this. In dental work, a lot of people don't realize when they get a crown, one third of the crown is metal, and they use different kind of metals, and there's an electro-galvanized effect. And what does he think about that voltage?
All right, this would be you, Jerry.
Yeah, would you ask me the question again about
what do you think about in crowns? Different metals are used. Does that affect the voltage?
Well, yes. Look. The way you create a battery is that you take a solution that will conduct electrons and you put two different metals in it. So commonly they'll use zinc and copper. And because if you have two different metals in a ionic solution, then electrons will move from one metal to the other and that gives you a battery. Well, if you have two different metals in your mouth because your saliva is an ionic solution, you have just created a battery inside your mouth. And the electrons move from one place to the other.
Oh, that's a good point.
The biggest problem with crowns, I mean, there is an issue with the problem with the metals, but the biggest problem with crowns is that the usual scenario is that you have a little tiny cavity. The dentist removes a third of your tooth in order to make undercuts so that a mercury filling doesn't fall out, and he puts mercury in there. Well, the tooth has been weakened, and over time, the tooth fractures down the side, so the dentist says, well, you need a crown.
And you definitely don't want that mercury. We're going to come right back, Jerry and Mark, and take final calls. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're with Dr. Jerry Tennant and Mark Starr. Jerry, can the biomodulator be a predictor of a future illness before it's even occurred?
Yeah, the first thing that goes down in cells is voltage. And then soon after that, you'll begin to get a change in blood tests. And then after that, you get symptoms. So the early warning sign is a drop in voltage, and you may see that long, you know, and still have normal blood tests. And then oftentimes people have abnormal blood tests but still no symptoms.
So if you see the voltage drop, you might be able to attack the problem.
Sure. Well, and I mean, it's obvious. If you go into your kitchen and you stick a voltmeter into the wall and it measures 90 volts, And that's the plug you have your refrigerator plugged into. Guess what's going to happen to your refrigerator? It's going to burn up.
Yeah, not going to work. Sandra's in Houston. Go ahead, Sandra. Thanks for holding.
Thank you so much. I'll make this very quick. I know you have a lot of people waiting. Thank you so much for this program.
Sure.
I just had a couple of questions, doctors, if you could, you know, just share with me. You know, it's almost like... these institutions are building in obsolescence into our bodies by mandating that we can only have certain treatments for cancer, fluoride in the toothpaste and mouthwash, and, you know, also antiperspirants. The doctor apparently had put on one of the medical websites that the the toxins that are ventilated through the armpits. By putting antiperspirant, you're putting yourself at risk for, you know, those toxins going elsewhere, you know, and breast cancer and things like that with, you know, and given the fact more and more men are getting breast cancer. But could you please, you know, tell us what we can do about it to change this so we have, you know, some patient rights? I really appreciate it, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right.
Move to Ecuador. No, I mean, you know, unfortunately, most of this stuff is about the money, isn't it? For example, the reason they put MSG in our food is because MSG is addicting. It's more addicting, perhaps, than nicotine. So when the food manufacturers puts MSG into your food and addicts you to it, then you keep wanting to buy more of it, so they sell more. And, of course, they hide it in there by giving it other names like textured vegetable protein and those kinds of things.
Well, it's like they're changing the name of aspartame now, too. Same thing.
So they can hide it. And aspartame, of course, is very addicting. It's addicting just like nicotine. So the reason they use high fructose corn syrup, which is a major, major cause of obesity in this country, is that it's cheaper than sugar. So it's all about the money, and unfortunately, you know, there's nobody minding the store for us. So the best you can do is read labels and try to buy things from markets, from farmers. But even that's a problem because I just read a news article this week where they are raiding farmers who are selling their products to individuals instead of stores, and they're taking away their produce and their computers and things. So it's getting hard. It's really hard to get good nutrition in this country, and I don't have a solution for it.
What, no more farmers markets, Jerry?
Well, I just read that the FDA has greatly increased their raiding of farmers who are selling direct to the public. They're actually going out to their farms and taking away their produce and their computers and things.
Jeez. Mark Starr, what do you think is the single biggest problem caused because of hypothyroidism?
Caused from it?
Yeah. What do you think the biggest issue is?
Oh, gosh. Fatigue and weakness are number one on the list of low thyroid symptoms. Joint and muscle pain is not a very distant second or third. So arthritis, heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes. Cancer is twice as likely to happen when you're low thyroid. But Dr. Tennant's book covers the whole gamut of all the things we're talking about as far as toxins and how to avoid it and what causes cancers. And it's just he has a huge discussion about all the medicines and hospital errors and basically, you know, how to stay healthy. It's an amazing compilation of research.
Super.
I don't think there's anything that can touch it as far as understanding how we got to where we are and how can we get out of it.
Jerry, are you a big booster of supplements?
Well, I wish I could say no, but I have to say yes. And the reason is what we were just discussing, and that is our food supply doesn't have much nutrition left. And so for a perfect example is if you take cane sugar manufacturers, or growers, they take the cane sugar, which contains lots of minerals, and they extract those minerals so they can sell them separately from the sugar. So now, you know, if a person is deficient in minerals, they crave sweets because the body needs minerals. Because in nature, everything that's sweet has a lot of minerals in it. But when we go get something sweet, all the minerals have been taken out. So you have to take those in supplement form because you just can't get them in the food supply anymore.
Good point. Back to the phones we go, Mira Lee in California. Hi, Mira Lee.
Hi.
There you
Thanks
go.
For taking my call, George and doctors. I have a couple questions real quick. My husband was diagnosed with extensive prostate cancer about a year and a half ago, and it's been almost 1 year that he had a type of surgery called cryogenics, where they freeze the prostate.
Frozen. Yeah.
Now he has so much more severe chronic pain. And they just diagnosed him with fibromyalgia. What do you suggest there that we do?
So my question is, what causes pain?
That's what we're trying to find out. It's all in his joints and his muscles and his nerve endings.
Remember that pain is simply a symptom of low voltage. So if you want to fix pain, you got to fix the voltage.
Got to fix the voltage. And by doing that, we would get the biomodulator.
Well, of course, I'm biased, but that's my favorite way of fixing things. But, again, you look, for example, if a person has hypothyroidism, then all of their circuits are going to be low voltage, and you're going to have to fix that with thyroid therapy, not just with the biomodulator. You can wear the biomodulator 24 hours a day as a portable battery pack, if you please, but you really have to fix it. If the voltages are low because of thyroid, you got to fix that with...
Okay, should we have his thyroid checked by his doctor?
Well, remember that 90% of hypothyroid people have normal blood tests. So
yes,
you can easily check it yourself.
With.
Just put a thermometer at your bedside, and when he wakes up in the morning, throw the covers off for 4 or 5 minutes, and then take the temperature. If it's below 97.8, he's hypothyroid.
Below 97.8. Okay. I myself I'm going to the doctors tomorrow. They did a thyroid test on me last month, so I'm waiting for the results to come back. I have hypertension. I've had it since I was 20 years old. I am now 40. I'm also hypoglycemic, and I'm allergic to all those, like the Splenda and the Sweet and Low and the Equal. I cannot have any of those artificial sweeteners. They make me sick.
Well, they make everybody sick, just not everybody knows it. But, aspartame is a neurotoxin. When they first started researching the NutraSweet, they gave it to 7 monkeys. Two of them died. 3 of them had seizures. And encouraged by such good results, they gave it to mice, and 46% of the mice had brain cancer.
Yeah, and then they approved it.
And so, you know, you're fortunate that it's not possible for you to take those because they're poisonous. Splenda is a really great ant killer. If you go out and spread Splenda on an ant den, it'll kill all the ants in it because it's a pesticide.
Mark, what do you recommend for a special thermometer for this thyroid test under the arm?
There's one called Geratherm, Geratherm. It's a mercury substitute thermometer, and it works a whole lot better than the digital thermometers. You can look it up online, and I think a number of the pharmacies are carrying it these days.
A lot of what you hear tonight, by the way, Dr. Jerry Tennant has put in his book, Healing is Voltage, and Mark Starr has in his book, Hypothyroidism Type 2, The Epidemic. Let's go back to final calls. Jennifer is in Panama City, Florida. Hey, good morning, Jennifer.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hey.
Well, my question is, since my early 20s, I'm 35 now, I've been battling with low thyroid and then high thyroid. And so I go back and forth. 2 or 3 times a year, my thyroid will raise and just go through the roof. But I also notice at the same time I get those, you know, manic episodes that go with bipolar at the same time when my thyroid increases. So I was wondering if the thyroid raising is causing the manic episodes or if it's the manic episodes causing the thyroid to rise.
The first question is your thyroid high on the blood test, or do you get rapid heartbeat and tremor and all the stuff that is?
Oh, no, yeah. I'm always being tested because I do have, you know, nodules and stuff like that. But they just mainly just test the TSH and the T4.
Right. Well, you need to check your basal temperature because you may just be low thyroid. And one of the main target of low voltage and low metabolism is the central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Tennant has all the vitamins that are necessary to make neurochemicals. So
mm-hmm.
when you're low thyroid, your voltage is as low, and typically people like you have some stomach problems as well, so you need lots of nutrition as well as thyroid. But the problem is they're diagnosing you just by the thyroid blood test. They give you more thyroid, and then they say
exactly.
You're on too much, and then you come back again, and they decrease the dosage, and now you have low thyroid, and you feel worse.
Right.
And they chase the blood test, which is
right.
What my book is about, and I'm sure Dr. Tennant has issues on that in his book as well.
But is there a connection between the, you know, the manic episodes of, you know, the increasing in thyroid hormone, or is that just something separate altogether, or I'm just maybe linking the two, you know, incorrectly?
Well, low thyroid can cause bipolar illness. It can cause any psychiatric illness. I have one case study in my book where a lady would take a little cortisol because her adrenals were low, and it would make her bipolar episode stop immediately when she felt it coming on. So, you know, again, the adrenals and the thyroid work very closely together. And for them to work properly, Dr. Tennant named all the vitamins and minerals you need. So, you know, check your basal temperature and try to find a doctor who treats patients instead of blood tests.
And, Jerry, who was the pioneer in the research on voltage and electricity? Was it Becker or before that?
Well, the original pioneer, you have to go all the way back to early Egyptians. They actually, all of the pyramids are designed as magnetic chambers, and the headdresses they wore were antennas, and they were treating themselves even that long ago. But then in modern times, it was Lakowski in Paris. He came, of course, in the mid-1800s.
In your research, do shamans practice this at all?
Well, that's a question we probably don't have time to get into, because we start getting into how atoms in the universe work and how you can communicate at distance and that sort of thing.
Hmm.
That's a long discussion.
But you can't you?
Sure. Yeah, that's in his book, too. By the way, I wanted a couple of things before we run out of time. I wanted to be sure that people are aware of a couple of things. One is that macular degeneration is a huge problem in this country. And if we can get people with a vision of 20/70 or better, we get almost all of those back to 20/20 or 20/25. And as an ophthalmologist, it's the only treatment I know that's really effective for macular degeneration. Second thing I wanted to mention is that we have this huge epidemic of autism in this country now. Somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 out of 50 boys is becoming autistic. And Dr. Shauna Young has done a great service in showing that the primary cause for autism is manganese, which is deposited in the brain. And then when you come and put mercury and aluminum, et cetera, on top of it, then you've got an autistic kid. The primary source of manganese is soy. So most of the, not all, but most of the autistic kids have been on soy infant formula. And one of the problems with soy infant formula, other than it having...
And now it's genetically modified.
Yeah. And see, a kid shouldn't have more than 0.5 milligram of manganese a day because they can't excrete it. And soy has like 1,400 milligrams a day. But in addition, soy infant formula is the same as giving a child 15 birth control pills per day.
Let's go to Chris in San Francisco, first-time caller. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm wondering, I'm a vegetarian, and I'd like to know what I can do to retain more iodine and zinc from my diet. I'm told that in developing countries, iodine and zinc isn't usually a problem in our diet, but for a diabetic, it might be difficult to retain them.
Would this be supplements, Jerry?
Well, first of all, as far as vegans are concerned, I don't think I've ever measured normal voltage in a vegan. And I have a friend, Dr. Frank Schallenberger up in Reno, who measures, he has equipment to measure mitochondrial function in cells, and he says he's never had a normal test in vegans either. So I think it's difficult to be completely healthy and be a vegan. For example, somewhere around 14% of cell membrane is supposed to be made up of arachidonic acid, and there's no vegetable source for that. So I have to question the wisdom of being a pure vegan. Now, I do believe that, you know, we should be eating smaller amounts of meat than is normally done in this country. But everybody, I think, needs some. Having said that, our soils are basically depleted of iodine, and essentially the only people that are not iodine deficient in the United States are those who eat seaweed every day. And, of course, eating is a problem because it contains lots of mercury. as far as zinc's concerned, our soils are pretty well depleted of zinc as well, and the problem is that zinc and cadmium work in the body interchangeably, and for our fertilizers contain lots of cadmium because they get the phosphates from metal plating industry, which has cadmium in it.
And if you have any questions at all about what Dr. Jerry Tennant has been talking about or Dr. Mark Starr, Jerry's put it all in his work called Healing is Voltage. Mark has in Hypothyroidism, too. Thanks so much, both of you, for being on the program. Great job. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Gina Salvati, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesure, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.